Hi, I'm William Anderson. I'm a neurosurgeon at Johns Hopkins Hospital.
And I'm Elizabeth Tracy. So glad to be with you this morning. We're going to be talking about a treatment for what?
We're going to be talking about a treatment for a type of neurological condition known as a movement disorder. Probably the most common types that we treat with this surgical treatment include Parkinson's disease, essential tremor, and less frequently, dystonia.
Let's talk about this word, dystonia. And then, of course, in medicine, we refer to these movement disorders as dyskinesias. Is that right?
Well, dystonia is a type of movement disorder, and dystonia involves patients that adopt almost uncontrollable, awkward postures. And that can occur sporadic throughout the day or can be triggered by various events. Often these postures are very painful. One of the most common that we see is cervical dystonia, and it has another name, torticollis. You'll meet people with this occasionally, and their heads are turned in one direction or another. And this posture can be adopted constantly, and the patients are in a great deal of pain because of it.
What about dyskinesia? What's that mean?
Dyskinesias are uncontrolled movements, and we most frequently see them in the context of people with Parkinson's disease, specifically patients with Parkinson's disease that are being treated with very effective medicine. It's a dopamine-type drug, Sinemet. However, in treating the basic symptoms of Parkinsonism, they develop these abnormal movements, dyskinesias, and the dyskinesias can almost be as disabling as the disease itself, especially if they've been on the medication for several years.
Well, since we have these three different categories then of things that can go wrong, tell me what is the mechanism for these if we take a look in the brain?
There are many models for what goes wrong in the brain. Probably the best understood is Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease is a type of neurodegenerative disease, and that means that part of the brain is actually degrading and the cells in the brain are dying over time. And there's a specific region of the brain that's affected in Parkinson's disease, the substantia nigra, which is a region of the brain that produces dopamine. The dopamine is used to excite and inhibit various circuits that are important for moving and for initiating movement and for stopping movement. And that's why when you see Parkinson's patients, many of them have a very hard time just taking that first step forward or making it through a doorway or arising from a chair. So these circuits are very important, sort of our basic, you know, modalities of getting around the house during the day, and they have a great deal of problems with that. The thing that really altered the treatment of this disease was the development of dopaminergic drugs, or drugs that affect the dopamine system in the brain. And that really has affected how long these patients can actually survive. And so most Parkinson's patients actually have a normal life expectancy at this point, thanks to the medical therapies that we can offer them. We additionally can offer a surgical treatment for this type of disease. It's called deep brain stimulation. It's a way of treating these patients when the patient develops side effects to the medicines that have just become too severe, or the fluctuations during the day associated with their medicine doses have become so strong that the medicine is just not tolerable anymore. And this surgery involves us actually placing a stimulation electrode into a region of the brain that's hyperactive.
Let's talk about this placement of these electrodes. Why would placing them in an area of the brain that's got too much activity going on help with the symptom?
That's a great question, and it's an area of active research, actually, because this certain region of the brain, it's a very small nucleus. It's about the size of the fingernail on your pinky finger. Because it's so hyperactive, it's acting abnormally in its normal circuitry that it affects. Because it's too hyperactive, that's what sort of shuts things down. But with the electrical stimulation, we're able to turn down that hyperactivity in some manner that we're not too sure about yet. We're able to quiet the cells down that live in that nucleus.
How interesting. So we're actually using some kind of stimulation of this in order to turn it down.
Exactly.
Now, is this also the same way that it works in essential tremor?
We're probably even less sure about how the electricity works in the brain, but there's a region of the brain that aids in passing information from the cerebellum, which is on the posterior aspect of your brain and is useful for coordination and movement control. There's a region of the thalamus that passes this information up to other regions of the brain, the cortex included. It seems to be functioning abnormally or passing abnormal signals. Because it's centrally located, this region of the thalamus, it's easily accessible with a deep brain stimulation electrode. And so that's a case that is also becomes a safe situation for us to place one of these devices, alter the abnormal activity, and decrease the tremors that these patients experience.
Let's let's talk about the surgery itself. How is that done? And then how do we power these devices? How often do their batteries need to be changed?
That's right. These devices do have batteries. The surgical procedure is performed in an operating room. And for the most part, the patients that undergo this procedure are awake because we want to interact with them while we're performing the surgery. We do a lot of testing on the electrodes that we implant. We apply electricity to them to make sure that patients don't have any side effects from the stimulation. And we also want to make sure that the stimulation is working, that it's stopping their tremors, that it's making them move in a more fluid manner in the case of Parkinson's disease. So we can do a lot of testing in the operating room itself. Once you're convinced that you've found the good location for implanting the electrode, then you close all the wounds up on the patient. And typically, we bring the patient back in about a week and we put a battery in. So everything about the system is actually under the skin, self-contained inside the patient. The batteries have a variable lifetime from 3 to 5 years.
How about changing the batteries? What's that take?
That's a fairly easy procedure. It's usually done under local anesthesia, and the pocket is opened, fresh batteries placed, and the cables are reattached. It's a fairly quick procedure. It only takes about 30 minutes to perform.
When we talk about the placement of the electrodes, they must sneak up from the neck.
Yeah, that's right. They're under the skin, but they do travel in a little pocket behind the ear, and then the cables travel over the scalp to where they enter the skull bone and travel down deep into the brain. But all that is, again, under the skin, and if we place it well, behind the hairline, so you can't actually see the bump from the cable.
So a little teeny tiny cable, sounds like.
They're fairly small, that's right, little wires.
Seems to me this kind of treatment for Parkinson's might actually be preferable to taking a medication that could have a whole host of side effects.
That's an excellent point. And over time, what we've realized, one of the most important benefits of these devices is it enables the patient to decrease the amount of medicine that they're using during the day. And that gets rid of a lot of these very annoying side effects that they suffer from, the dyskinesias being one of the main ones.
Surely. So what are your thoughts on the matter? Would you suggest that as we get better at this or more people do it, that we might actually be treating more people with Parkinson's this way?
I think that's an area of active investigation. One of the things that we used to do, we would wait until these patients got pretty sick before we put these devices in. The question arises, should we be putting these devices in earlier to get them a better quality of life sooner?
And I guess I would ask the same question about essential tremor, which we know affects so many people.
And there the jury is even less convinced about that. But I think at some point we may find ourselves implanting these devices in younger, healthier patients that are more disabled by their conditions rather than waiting until a caregiver is having to do most of their activities of daily living for them. But I think we will have the answer to that over the next few years.
That must be an area that we're doing research on here.
Because there aren't many of these patients to practice, it takes many centers collaborating together to generate the data for this. So often there'll be one or two trials running nationally to study these questions involving 5 or 6 centers in each trial. We have to pull our resources because it's a fairly rare disease.
I know that we have a Parkinson's center here. Would you say that someone who's particularly bothered by their Parkinson's disease ought to be seen in such a center?
The first step is to find a good practicing movement disorder neurologist, and many of these are at some of the larger academic centers, Johns Hopkins being one of them. I do think it's a good idea at least to get a second opinion with a movement disorder neurologist as you move forward with your disease treatment.
Would you suggest that there could be expansion of the use of these kinds of treatments in other movement disorders that might arise from a different reason?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And there are active studies ongoing to investigate the use of this therapy in Tourette syndrome and even in psychiatric conditions like major depression and schizophrenia and in obsessive compulsive disorder. It may be that we've learned a little bit about how we can control specific small regions of the brain with this electrical stimulation device. And as we learn more about other conditions of the brain, it might be useful in helping us either shut down or increase the activity of other regions.
What else would you like to add about deep brain stimulation?
We've become much quicker with the implementation in the operating room, and many groups are not using the frame that attaches to the patient's head to help us guide the electrode in. It's possible even to place these electrodes inside an MRI magnet. So we're really advancing the methods we use to place these electrodes. I'm very excited about offering this procedure in the future in a very safe and comfortable manner for the patient.
Excellent. Thank you so very much.
Yes.